He grew up in rural Clinton County, understanding the importance of service. Mitch Frazier began his career in public service, 5 years in the military, including key communications roles in the wake of Hurricane Katrina and 9/11. He would go on to serve in a key executive role in one of the state's highest profile tech companies, and later serve as CEO of a regional John Deere dealer. Now, Mitch Frazier is taking on perhaps his most ambitious role yet, leading efforts to grow the state's more than $37 billion ag bioscience sector. Pleased to be joined on the podcast this week by the president and CEO of Agrinovis Indiana, Mitch Frazier. Mitch, how are you?
Gary, I could not be any better. I mean it. Thanks for spending some time, and great to spend some time with you and talk about things we both care a lot about, which is ag bioscience and all the things that are happening in Indiana.
Lots. And there are lots of things happening, and you're right on the forefront there. Let's get right to it, because you're a busy guy, but you are just back from a trade mission, right? So you've been to Mexico and Brazil with Governor Holcomb and some others, and it was a trip that was really focused on agriculture and the ag biosciences. Talk about, give us kind of the 50,000-foot view, first of all, on that trip and what it was all about.
You know, this is, I believe, Governor Eric Holcomb's first dedicated trade mission entirely to ag bioscience, and I believe his first trip to Brazil and Mexico. Really interesting in both cases, in both markets. You know, we'll start in Brazil. Brazil, a giant producer of ag commodities, and just to identify ways in which the two countries' products from the two companies can coexist, where there's opportunity, but also how do we build this bridge between the two markets? We met with a number of startup companies, ag tech companies specifically, who were looking at how do they enter the U.S. market. And good news is we have a good precedent with that. We've taken companies like Soliftech, a company now in West Lafayette that you've met with a number of times, an ag tech company who have made the jump from how do we continue to serve in Brazil, but how do we bring that technology? How do we bring that background into U.S. agriculture, row crop?
Hey Mitch, let me interrupt you there just quickly, because I think Soliftech is a great example.
For sure.
Give us a thumbnail, precision agriculture. Give us a thumbnail description of that company, because it's really, I think, as you mentioned, I think it's a great example of the kinds of companies we want to keep here, but also we want to attract here.
Without a doubt. Soliftech, a really interesting company. AgTechs, again, specifically, started out as a software company, a company that has hundreds of employees in Brazil, growing here in Indiana. They came initially to look at how do you orchestrate farm operations and how do you drive efficiency in operations. What they realized over time was there's a huge opportunity to do both the software and the hardware. A couple of years ago, we saw them introduce a new robot called Solix. Solix being a solar-powered, think of it as a scout going through the field, identifying challenges that exist in growing conditions, but they've expanded that now to actually be a sprayer. So not only can it identify a problem, it can take action on that problem. They launched a partnership, I believe it was last year, with an Indiana-based manufacturer, now doing both manufacturing of the hardware and development of software here in the States.
It's a great story, and it continues to have impact, certainly here in Indiana. So as you're in Brazil and Mexico, did you see any or meet with any maybe future Soliftechs that were out there?
I believe we did. We met with a number of startups, big companies as well, but a number of startups specifically in Brazil. And I think we'll have some, hopefully, fingers crossed, we'll have some good news on the horizon. It's a different market, right? You look at Brazil as a tropical market, multiple crops in a year. You can't just sort of lift and replace from Brazil to Indiana. There's evolution that has to happen. But within the network of Indiana's ag bioscience economy, I think we can help make that transition and help them access a market while we continue to grow our economy.
Yeah, I think I talked to Governor Holcomb when he was, in Brazil at that time. And he talked about the kind of the analogy of, Indiana growing out of the forest here in the Midwest, Brazil growing out of the rainforest, and the kind of the synergies there as you look to the future in terms of ag bioscience and technology.
Without a doubt. And you look at not just the opportunity of how do we think about row crops as a commodity, But how do we think about row crops? How do we think about agriculture? How do we think about ag bioscience as part of this new bioeconomy? Now, a lot of work has happened. We've seen here in Indiana, Agrinovis was a part, BioCrossroads a part, Central Indiana Corporate Partnership at large on attracting this federal biotech hub, really called Heartland Bioworks, really to focus on this intersection between plants, animals, people, and the planet. And Gary, the ability for an organization like Agrinovis, like BioCrossroads, like CICP, to be a part of something where it's taking all the assets that live on the Indiana balance sheet and turning them into the income statement. It is amazing the opportunity we have before us.
Yeah, well, we talk about that opportunity because to me, and no one would do a better job than you doing this, but to me, it's very difficult to quantify how large the opportunity is for the state of Indiana when you look at the assets that are here from the academic side, from the companies that are here, on and on and on. Indiana would seem to be positioned just supremely well to take advantage of that.
Without a doubt, there's a report that's out now floating around. Forbes ran a story on it. This bioeconomy globally is estimated to be a $30 trillion market, $30 trillion over the next two decades. And when you look at Indiana's balance sheet, the assets we have here in the state, take a look at this. So we have Corteva, the largest pure play ag company in the world, headquartered here. We have Elanco, the second largest independent animal health company, headquartered here. We have Elevance Health, the nation's second largest health insurer, the one who's actually paying for health, right? We have the most valuable human pharma company in the world. We have the assets that are here. Oh, and we can't forget, we have the nation's largest medical school and Indiana University Medical School. And all of those are here. It's up to us to link arms, to find the connections, to tackle this market that is this bioeconomy. And I think we're positioned to do it.
And certainly that's really, it gets to the heart of the mission at Agrinovis Indiana that you are leading. For those who aren't familiar, go back to the creation of Agrinovis, because I remember being at the announcement of Agrinovis Indiana when it was started, when it was created. And I remember thinking to myself, why wasn't this done many years earlier? You know, because right. of those assets you mentioned, they're all here. And I remember being in that room and there were CEOs and university leaders and others there that all seemed to be at that time bought in, sold, way into what was about to happen. So a lot of great potential there.
Without a doubt, when you look at where we came from, we being Agrinovis, BioCrossroads is a sister initiative focused really on the life sciences industry, human health, maybe a more specific frame. When there was work that was happening within BioCrossroads, it became clear there is a market here in food and agriculture that's unique, specifically around innovation. And in 2015, 2016, that announcement that you mentioned, Beth Bechtel, the founding CEO of Agrinovis, launched that initiative as part of the Central Indiana Corporate Partnership. And what was really interesting is we look back, I mean, hindsight provides so much clarity. We came out and this was really an organization focused on how do we connect and convene? How do we bring people across food and animal health and plant science and ag tech and agriculture? How do we bring them all together to really fuel the next chapter of this economy? Well, in 2020, amidst the pandemic, I had the chance to join from Reynolds Farm Equipment. And really the next chapter became really clear. And that next chapter was one built on growth. And so we launched a program, this new strategy, a new vision focused on grow called Grow 2024. We set a big target, Gary, to add $4 billion to this economy by the end of 2024. Well, we just got data back late last year. And I'm delighted to share that we saw this economy grow $6 billion in 36 months. $6 billion in 36 months, not $6 billion in 6 years, or that was a plan, right? And to beat that quickly, I think as evidence is reflective of what's here, this unique combination of assets, this collective focus on growth and really desire to drive innovation.
What is driving it though? There's got to be some fuel to kind of spark things and get there. As you look at how you're hitting those ambitious metrics, why is it happening?
I think it's happening from a number of reasons. Primarily, we have an industry who is focused on growth. When I joined the organization, it was really clear. Our board, which is 30 of the top leaders across ag bioscience from industry, from academia, from government, all linked arms and said, look, we care about a lot of things, but we care mostly about two things. We want more companies here and we want more startups here. And that mission becomes really clear. And when you know what you're focused on, the adage is those without vision shall perish. Well, those with vision shall succeed. And we set a vision, we built infrastructure, and we went and chased it. And we're driving that growth and we're seeing that growth. Since we launched Grow 2024 back in mid-2020, we've worked with IEDC to secure commitments for over 3,500 new jobs just in ag bioscience and over $2.2 billion in committed capital investment. You look back to 2022, three of the top five venture capital deals in the entire state were ag bioscience companies. Wow. There is a lot happening here, but it's only because industry has made this a priority and said, this is a really critical thing that we need to go do. And we've built the infrastructure to enable that growth to happen.
Well, as you talk about those big economic development deals, those big jobs announcements, got to have talent to fill those jobs, obviously, in the talent pipeline. And obviously, not just here in Indiana, every state is facing a challenge when it comes to talent. As you look at the talent equation, if you will, or the challenge that's out there to fill that talent pipeline in the ag bioscience space, how would you characterize where things are?
When you look at the talent needs, while there are some very specific needs within the ag bioscience economy, there are also some of the similar needs we see across all advanced economies. If you are a marketing major, a data science major, an engineering major, if you are an early career member of a profession like analytical chemistry, those jobs exist here. What we've taken on in Agrinovis is we've said, what's the most important thing we can do is actually inform, educate, inspire, excite students, early career professionals that they could have a career in this economy, this ag bioscience economy, the only economy in the world that touches every person on the planet because it centers on food. If you're a data science major, you're a marketing major, you're a finance major, there's a place for you here. And to create that magnet with an infrastructure like Field Atlas, we could spend some time there. It's working. We're getting young people, we're getting early career students interested in a vocation, not just a job.
Is part of it, for lack of a better term, education in terms of educating young people, you know, maybe at a younger age, as to the opportunities that exist in the ag bioscience space?
That's exactly it. We created Field Atlas, myfieldatlas.com, as this digital platform to help inspire, to help educate, I'm going to say even to excite young people about the opportunity. You know, we hear so often that young people don't just want a job. They want to be a part of something. They want to have purpose. They want to do something that matters. Well, there is nothing more that matters anymore than making sure people can eat. And that is what is at the core of this economy. And so Field Atlas has become this beautiful digital platform, but it's also become activated on college campuses through what we call Field Atlas Ambassadors. And these are students that work part-time for Agrinovis. Imagine this. I mean, there's a student sitting in a class right now on the campus of Purdue or the campus of Rose Holman who is sitting next to someone and maybe they're talking about ag bioscience or maybe they spoke last week at a class or they spoke with staff or faculty and you have this peer-to-peer connection back to inspiring, educating, helping others understand what opportunities exist here. That's been a differentiating force for what we're building here at Agrinovis.
Yeah, expand a little bit on that Field Atlas program because I had the opportunity to interview several of those ambassadors. They're very impressive young people who are spreading that word, as you say, on campuses all over the state of Indiana, right? You mentioned Rose Holman, Notre Dame, IU, Purdue. You can go on down the list.
That's right.
It has grown into quite a program.
It has grown into quite a program. These young people are doing amazing things. And when I say amazing things, we have a Field Atlas ambassador who's actually going to work for a large plant science organization here in Indiana, actually in their Puerto Rico operations. And this student, I don't believe, ever would have thought that ag bioscience would have been a part of their vocational calling prior to having these interactions. We have another one that is headed to a food company in Spain, where you're seeing these students who maybe never saw themselves as part of the ag bioscience economy, now seeing themselves because they're surrounded by it. And I think we talk about talent, and we talk about this across the economy, not just here in ag bioscience, and you see it every day. We see it every month when the unemployment figures come out and people say, how can we? How can we inspire more? How do we get more people in the workforce? I think the onus is on us. I think the onus is on us in industry to help paint a picture for what's possible and then create the infrastructure to take that ambition and turn it into action. And that's what we're seeing with Field Atlas.
Do you sense the ag bioscience space is part of that changing Indiana economy, you know, for so many years, for decades, manufacturing and advanced manufacturing, the backbone of the economy, still extremely important, to be sure, no doubt about it, and served Indiana so well. But now when you look at the jobs you're talking about in the ag bioscience space, tremendous careers. You look at microelectronics and semiconductors, right, where you have advanced degree people, but you also have people with maybe 2-year associate degrees, those types of things, getting good careers and jobs, that this is kind of a changing, if you will, in terms of the Indiana economy and jobs.
I think it's really the nexus of a lot of those things. When you look at the ag bioscience economy, again, food manufacturing, value-added food and nutrition is a piece of it. We have the great fortune of leveraging the strength of our manufacturing capability to turn something into something else, typically food. When we look at plant science and crop protection, again, we're making things. When animal health and animal nutrition, we're making things. So we can leverage that strength of manufacturing. I look at my previous life in technology, and you look at the great technology innovations that have happened here in Indiana, that capability creates opportunity to take ideas in ag, the data in ag, and turn it into new products and new insights. I really believe this ag bioscience economy is the nexus of a lot of these pieces. And when you look at, maybe step back a little bit with an eye on the horizon, the reality is so many people in this economy are a generation or two away from the farm or away from rural Indiana. This is our opportunity to not just paint a picture about, you don't have to put that behind you. You can actually use that strength, use that expertise, use that insight, combine it with your vocational pursuits, combine it with your educational pursuits, and we can build an economy that is even stronger than the one we have today.
One more question on the talent and the academic piece before we go to a break, Mitch. Another interesting element, I think, is, you know, you've got a university world-class in the ag space, ag bioscience space in Purdue.
Absolutely.
But you look around the state of Indiana at other colleges and universities that are getting into the ag game. Huntington University, I think, is a good example that has really beefed up its ag and ag-related programs for students based on demand.
Without a doubt. You look at what is here, and I'll use the balance sheet analogy again. You know, Purdue University, a land-grant institution. You know, the only university in America with a top 10 ag school as well as a top 10 engineering school. And that's incredible. And then you look at what that creates. It creates an opportunity for a small school like Huntington University to create a really unique agricultural program. You look at the opportunity to connect that into what we're seeing at the nation's largest medical school at IU. IU's strength in informatics, in business. Notre Dame's strength and sustainability and innovation, engineering capability at Rose Holman. It goes on and on and on. And that's the piece that I get excited about what's ahead in the ag bioscience economy, because it's going to take all of those things. This isn't going to be just agronomists or just veterinarians that shape the future of this economy. This is going to be data scientists and engineers and business majors and finance majors. It's going to be all of those people. Well, this is the opportunity I think we have that's unique here in Indiana.
Much more ahead with Mitch Frazier, the CEO at Agrinovus Indiana, his path to Agrinovus, the military, technology, state government, all part of it. That's when we return.
At PNC Bank, we're committed to making a difference in the lives of our customers and communities by helping them move forward financially. As a Main Street bank, we try to do right by our customers with every encounter. Our local teams offer personalized financial advice to help guide you in making the best decision. We're proud to be part of your community. PNC Bank. See how we can make a difference for you at pnc.com. Copyright 2022, the PNC Financial Services Group, Inc. All rights reserved.
Welcome back to the Business and Beyond podcast presented by PNC. My guest this week is Agrinovus President and CEO Mitch Frazier. And Mitch talked a lot about the exciting space that you are in every day in terms of the ag bioscience space. Tremendous opportunity for Indiana. Take a step back at your path to what you're doing now. You're a native Hoosier. Where'd you grow up?
Native Hoosier, didn't grow up on a farm. I grew up around farms in rural Tipton County, a little town called Sharpsville just outside. And
you would have a lot of farms around there,
a
right?
A lot of farms. Later on in life, had a chance to serve some of those farmers as a John Deere dealer.
What was growing up in rural Tipton County? What was it like?
You know, it was great. I look back and you never know when you're journeying through life what the opportunity you have and just the uniqueness that it is. And I'm so grateful for growing up. I think Tri-Central High School is where I went to school. High school, actually K through 12 was in the same building, to give you an idea of the size and scale of the school. Just amazing. I mean, you look at the teachers we had, the friends that we had. In fact, some of my friends, I mean, this is crazy, Gary, and this speaks to what I love about Indiana. One of my friends from kindergarten is now a colleague at Corteva.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
So our paths have crossed. I mean, that's what's so unique is this place that we call home. We're all driven to do. We're all driven to thrive. We're all focused on the same thing. And I think that's giving back and doing something bigger. And I learned that early on. I loved it. And now I get to do that every day as a professional, maybe a little older with a little bit more gray hair.
I like it. Grade school, high school, was it sports, academics, the arts? What were you into back then?
I wasn't a very good athlete. I mean, I tried.
That surprises me. I mean, it does. You're very athletic. You're a runner, right?
I am. Yeah, I wasn't very good. Dave Driggs was our cross country coach, and I think I might have been the worst runner ever for Dave. So Dave, if you're listening, apologies. I really found my niche in working. I know that maybe sounds silly, but I fell in love with journalism. I fell in love with the news business, and I had a little company that I created photos by Frazier and was taking pictures. Those memory mates, if you remember those things from like the baseball teams and basketball teams, did that.
Yeah.
Had a part-time job with the Tipton County Tribune and ended up joining the Army in high school. And all those things really came together, Gary, and really helped shape what I hope the leader is I am today.
We'll talk about a couple of those things. One, the military. So and you served. Thanks for your service. And it started in high school, right? That entree to the military.
That's right. I'll never forget. In December of 1996, I told my parents. So Dad was an Army guy before. Both grandpas were in the service. So one grandpa was in the Navy. One grandpa was in the Marine Corps. And I said, Mom and Dad, I really want to join the military, and I need you to sign for me. And look, if you don't sign for me when I turn 18, I'm going to sign. So why don't we just cut the chase?
Let's get it over with, right?
And so I think they honored my wishes, which I'm grateful for to this day. Signed in December of 96, went to basic training between my junior and senior year of high school. So I was in the Army Reserves. And shortly after graduation from Tri-Central, went active duty and was on active duty for 5 years. And it absolutely changed my life.
Wow. Talk about your military experience. Where were you? What were some of the things you did?
Sure. So I was a public affairs specialist, which is a fancy way to say I was a journalist early on. Spent some time in training and then was down at Fort Benning, Georgia, and spent a couple of years down in Fort Benning, sort of working my way through the ranks. A lot of really interesting experiences. And then was transferred to Monterey, California. I know, tough duty.
Boy, that's a tough post there,
tough,
Mitch.
Tough duty. And that was in 2000. And here's what was... The good Lord always provides and creates opportunity you don't fully realize at the time. But in 2000, I joined as the only enlisted guy. I was an enlisted soldier in the Army, was the only enlisted guy in the public affairs office for what is the Defense Language Institute. That's where we teach people from all across the services how to speak and write and understand foreign languages. As we all know, in September of 2001, the terrorist attacks of 9/11 happened. And as a public affairs soldier, that was my job, was to communicate what it was we were doing. If you've ever been to Monterey, California, two of the three roads that cross the Monterey Peninsula cross through the Presidio of Monterey, this language institute. And it was pretty much an open campus prior to that. And so early on in my career, to be thrust into a position of not just leadership, but action. And it was transformational for me. I didn't know it at the time, but this idea of being able to quickly understand what was happening, take action, and be able to communicate it really has served me well and really led to what the next chapter was, where I left the Army. I finished my 5 years on active duty and went to work for the Army as a civilian.
What do you remember about that post 9/11 time and where you were in life? What do you remember about those times?
Well, I want to tell you, I'll share the story of how I found out 9/11 happened, because I think this sort of puts everything into perspective, at least for me. I don't often remember life without a smartphone or life without connectivity. So as the public affairs soldier, I had a flip phone, and that was the on-duty phone. And I'll never forget the NBC affiliate from Salinas, Monterey, that market, called me that morning. So we were West Coast time, so it was still pretty early in the morning. And the reporter, who I knew well, said, "Hey, they just attacked the Pentagon and just attacked the World Trade Center. What are you guys going to do?" And that was how I found out.
Wow.
And so it was get the uniform on, head to the office. And I'll tell you, you know what? A couple things that I think that I remember plainly is people were, one, unified. I think we saw the country unite. I think we saw service members unite. I think we saw the world unite against evil. And that was a force that I'll never forget. And then secondarily, I think we saw this need for information. We saw a hunger for information, and people wanted a trusted source of information. And I think that has really shaped the way that I think about communication, the way that I think about the way in which we execute or have executed the rest of my career is news. The root word of news is new. And so to be able to communicate well and to communicate quickly, really, really important. And I think we saw that in the wake of 9/11. I think we still continue to see that as a need that needs filled today.
You went to Upper Iowa University, and I know where that is, Fayette, Iowa, right?
Fayette, Iowa, home of the Peacocks. So here's the story, Gary. This is one that I don't know that I've ever told before. So Upper Iowa University, so I'm in the Army, and I've bounced around from college to college. I've moved here from Georgia to California, did some community college out in California. I'm getting ready to get out of the Army, going to go to Kansas City to take this job with the Army Corps of Engineers. And I said, "Hey, look, I need to transfer these credits somewhere, and I don't want a degree mill. Where is there a real school that I could transfer these to that I could finish?" And the education office said, "Well, there's this school in Iowa, in Fayette, Iowa. It's a real school, you know, and they're starting this online program." And again, that doesn't sound that novel, but in 2003, that was pretty breaking, cutting edge. And so I finished my undergrad in marketing with Upper Iowa, and actually got my MBA from Upper Iowa. And I've been to campus once, and that was to walk across the line for my MBA.
That's great. Hey, before we run out of time, want to touch on you've had a great career. The Indiana Economic Development Corporation, you were a key player in communications there. I think that's where I first met you.
That's right.
Actually, and a lot was certainly happening at that point. But your experience that I'm sure was very impactful was at Exact Target, which ultimately right. Salesforce made that acquisition. What was that like from a business, from an entrepreneurial innovation standpoint, and the Scott Dorseys and others that you had a chance to interact with at Exact Target?
Transformational doesn't begin to describe it. I joined Exact Target in 2009, and I employ 300-ish, somewhere in that range. And to see what happened, many know the story of, you know, at that time, we were a single product company with a single geography, a really good email company, email marketing company. And over the next 5 years, we would have acquired six companies, raised well over an additional $100 million in venture capital, took the company public. I had a chance to become the investor relations officer and be a part of the IPO. And you know what's really interesting here, Gary, is, you know, I spent some time in Iraq as a civilian working for the Army. And then I spent time, as you mentioned, with Governor Daniels, Mitch Daniels, I think one of the most brilliant, just driven leaders I've ever had a chance to spend time with. And to see all those things, time in Iraq, Mitch Daniels, come together, this seems a little maybe incongruent, but to come together in an organization like Exact Target. You know, Scott Dorsey, an amazing leader, you know, one of the things that he challenged me with early on was, we're building this company, we're doing amazing things. How do we communicate, and how do we make sure that people know what we're doing as we grow meteorically? And so Scott created a Friday note. And so I got to help Scott every Friday. Scott would send out an email, and I had a chance to be a part of that mission. But I'll tell you, that Friday note discipline came from Joe Schrodel, a general in the Army that I had a chance to work for in San Francisco. And Joe would bang out a note, misspellings and all, on his BlackBerry. And so we took that to Exact Target. And I will tell you, I have had a Friday note at every job I've had since. And it's those kinds of things where you don't often see them all come together. My time in Iraq, where we were talking about the drumbeat, and we've had, you know, I've implemented the drumbeat strategy at Exact Target, and we've done it at Reynolds Farm Equipment and here at Agrinovis. All of these pieces, you know, our careers are a compendium of the experiences we've had. And holy cow, it's been a fun one.
That's a great, I love it. Friday note. I like that. I like that story. It's a great, great idea. Mitch, it's been a real treat to catch up with you. Always great to see you. Thank you for all you do for Indiana, because it is significant. It has been for a long time. And I know that impact is just going to continue in bigger ways as well. Thanks very much.
Gary, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
And thank you for joining us on this episode of the Business and Beyond podcast. It is presented by PNC. And you can check out all of our episodes, 150 plus, at insideindianabusiness.com, where you can get Indiana Business News 24/7 as well. I'm Gary Dick. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time.